Hey team, welcome back to Game Time. I'm your host and coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths, and I'm so grateful to have a conversation with an impactful leader. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you've been watching or if you're new, every episode is designed to help you take your leadership game to the next level because I believe that leadership is a sport, folks. And that means that we all have the choice every single day to choose this mindset and the way of showing up that I refer to as the leadership athlete mindset. And it borrows from a lot of characteristics that we tend to see in high performing athletes and business people, which brings me to our guest today, who I am so excited about, who is perfect for this episode, for this podcast in general, Laura Barnard. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, Shauna. It's great to see you again.
Thank you. So, folks, Laura and I have gotten to know each other on LinkedIn. I truly feel a little in awe of all the things that you're doing. And I know we talked about this a little bit earlier, where sometimes people may say something nice like that to us. And we're like, what? Who, me?
But well, yeah. Right back at you. I think I nervously reached out to you to be like, could we connect? And you responded. I was like, very excited to meet you. So I would. Feeling is mutual.
Oh, thank you so much. I love all the stuff that you're doing in the space of leadership, you know, your company Breakthrough. I love your focus on transforming what's going on in leadership. And I think you know about me by now. I am obsessed with the topic myself. I've heard you talk or seen you write that you have a bit of, I think I've heard you call it a fixation. And I love it. And I just appreciate it. So I want to start out with that. And, you know, I would love for you actually, before we go any further, to share with us, what are you doing with Breakthrough? What are you doing in the leadership space? Because it is unique and I really want to be shining the light on it.
Appreciate that. Thank you. And sometimes I question, what exactly are we doing? This is like philosophical. What is going on here? Pretty much every day. But what are we doing? We talk about transforming the leadership development landscape. And if I go back in history a little bit, you know, if I go back to the beginning of this profession, of this concept of leadership and this idea of developing leaders, it goes back in history, hundreds of years. When you look back in time, some of these approaches, principles, ways to develop leaders are very much dipped in the past. They're antiquated. They're based on some systemic biases and discrimination and stereotypes and things that do not look like what the face of leadership looks like today. So we're trying to unwind some of the past, which is hard. There's a lot of ingrained and accepted ways of thinking about leadership and traits of leadership and characteristics that are, some of them are good, but not all of them sort of, you know, kind of carry with us into the future. So we're trying to look at ways to open up sort of the definition of who can lead, how we talk about their leadership, how we coach, develop, train them as leaders, and doing that change how companies are developing emerging leaders and really help them identify that leadership potential that exists within the organization, even amongst those folks who do not have the title of leader or president or C-suite, but really help put a lens on the whole employee organization and say, okay, who's out here who can lead, and can we unlock that capacity to lead that exists within them? And that's very different than the past, which would say, okay, if you're not, you know, cisgender white male at this certain age, at this certain level in the organization with this degree or this pedigree, you're not going to lead. And that's just a different, we're in a different space now. And we're trying to do this work in a way that's more modern and inclusive.
Yeah. It makes so much sense when you talk about it like that, including the stamp of time and history, because we have this way in, I'll call it just America, of working 9-to-5 jobs. There are certain things about work in general,
yes,
that, to your point, are very rooted in things that are nowhere near this time and this reality. And so it's this weird juxtaposition of completely outdated practices, but then force-fitting brand new tech-forward things like AI note takers and things like that. And I also really appreciate the ways that leadership is available to more people than what is traditionally accepted.
Exactly.
And the reason I really like that is because with it, even the way you described it, it's talking about sort of early intervention, call it. So this is not wait till you're 40 something years old and get a title and then start working on leadership. And I I'm leaning into it because I believe it so firmly myself. We cannot start early enough working on these leadership fundamentals.
Totally agree. And I see it, you know, I have the opportunity to teach about this topic, you know, in high schools, at the collegiate level, with MBA programs, all the way up to those C-suite folks who, you know, kind of know what they're doing, hopefully. But the it always surprises me, you know, the reluctancy of hands to go up when I ask, raise your hand if you think you're a leader amongst, you know, this classroom or this audience. And the hands don't shoot straight up, right? There's this hesitancy that I don't, you know, because I'm not a manager of people or have that role or that title, that position, they don't see themselves that way. They don't believe in themselves as leaders. And sometimes when they look out into the world, they don't see folks who look, act, sound, behave like them in leadership. So they don't have those role models. So it starts early on, I think, that mindset, that belief that, you know, yes, I'm a leader. And then, you know, what we can do once you get past that first hurdle, then how do I lead and how do I express myself? How do I articulate my leadership identity, all those good things. But it starts very early. And I think back to my own like childhood and upbringing, I had the great privilege and, you know, positive environment of parents and coaches and teachers who talked to me like I was a leader, who, you know, elicited that from me, who encouraged that in me, saw that in me. And it was hard for me not to see it in myself because I was having those positive messages. And so many people don't have that. So if we can, you know, in the early stages with those emerging leaders, open up their thinking and give them some examples of achievable, you know, still inspirational, but achievable examples of people who look different than what we think of past presidents, for example, like we want to open up that definition for people, but having that belief and that mindset is really where it starts. And most people don't have it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one of the thing too is that when people are saying, I don't see myself as a leader, usually to your point, that's associated with a title or literally being able to point at these are a call it like a, oh my God, what's it called? I'll say a decision tree. Like, no,
yeah.
Org chart is the word I was looking for. An org chart where people are actually like looking at it and be like, these boxes report into me. And one of the things that I emphasize so much and through my own learning and experience is that ability to lead starts within yourself to yourself first. Like you're a basketball player. I didn't say this earlier, but folks, she played at Harvard. Just a little bit of a basketball player.
Just a few years ago, decades ago.
I reference this a lot because when I was at Michigan coach my freshman year, some of the things that she left upon me were really important. And the thing she said about when you point the finger at other people, you have fingers pointing back at yourself. You actually have more fingers pointing back at yourself. So I bring that up a lot because in the arena, call it, of leadership, I think it's really important to think about. Because again, people think about, am I a leader that is kind of like the pointing out to other people, who are the people I'm going to point to say I am leading them. But again, it's like, but when you do that, you literally have fingers pointing back at you. So how much can you develop yourself as a leader to be able to be effective for other people? And so as I'm hearing you talk, it seems to me that's probably some of the initial foundational elements that are part of your philosophy. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, especially with young people, you know, try to change the framing a little bit. Like instead of saying, you know, are you a leader? You know, think about the times, those spaces and those places where you're impacting others, influencing others, trying to change a trajectory of something and whatever it is for them. Like there's things that they're doing that may not fit the traditional definition of leadership within, you know, from that podium or that authoritarian sort of perspective of the person in charge. But this idea, you know, we talk about leadership being more of this network than this ladder. Like you don't have to climb the ladder up to this higher level to be a quote unquote leader. Leadership exists within teams. It exists within communities. It exists, you know, from schools up to boardrooms, but it's this idea of it being more of a collaborative exercise. Like I love what you said about it being a sport. I would add a team sport versus in this network concept versus a linear sort of hierarchical ladder.
Yeah. So when you were coming up playing, did you feel like you had the people that you were looking at and saying that I can see myself being able to do it because of that person? Did you have that? Or
yeah, I think back, I was reflecting on this you know, I've had the great opportunity to like reconnect with old teammates a lot through reunions and through the years, and just kind of keep tabs on each other. But I look back to those, even the high school days where I had upperclassmen who were role models for me in terms of, you know, their captains or just, you know, floor leaders or bench leaders even, and seeing, you know, seeing myself in them and seeing, okay, how I could emulate that. And for sure, you know, at the collegiate level, that was the first time I had a very strong female coach. I'd always been coached by men, like most,
yeah, same.
Most youth sports are. We're trying to change that, but having Kathy Delaney Smith, who was the coach at Harvard for 41 seasons. So that's a long time. Very dedicated, very legendary coach. But she, for me, sort of opened up my thinking of what was possible in terms of that impact that one person could have on so many people. And just this idea of more than just a basketball coach, you know, having the psychology lens on things and using the power of the mind and really focusing on interpersonal and that social style of leadership, which I hadn't seen before. It was something that was new. It didn't fit the traditional mold of leadership that I had studied or become accustomed to, and nor had I, or I had been coached by. You know, I'd been coached by very different profiles of more authoritarian, like assertive, dominant coaches. So it was a different style that I was very curious about. It was like, this is very interesting. And again, is this something I can emulate? Can I relate to? And I could see firsthand the impact that she had. And it was, she achieved very, very high level outcomes through very different methods than anything I had seen or read about or heard. And that was, I think, really sparked for me, like, okay, this is a way I want to lead. And can I do the same thing for other people? Can I also, as she did for us, empower us to lead, regardless of whether we were the first star player or the last kid off the bench? She wanted us all to look, act, sound, behave like leaders. And I think I have that same ingoing assumption when I work with the group or a team, that I'm assuming you're all leaders. I'm going to help you, kind of empower you to be the best versions of yourselves. And I want you to all be different. I want you to express what makes you unique. I want you to be authentic. I don't want you to fit into some predetermined category that you think you should be in, because that's what the past, you know, sort of dictated. I want you to think about what's needed for you in the moment and for the future. So that shift of thinking started early, and that sort of, I've carried that with me.
That is incredible to hear, because I think especially, it feels to me like that kind of what you're just describing, that pouring into your athletes, your players, with that degree of intention and awareness, has been something that's happened more recently, rather than, it surely wasn't a part of when I was coming up. And so it's really nice to hear. And I think I love that, because to your point, it was representation in the seat of leadership that meant something to you. That's
exactly
awesome.
Exactly. And it was, I think, you know, this was dating myself like over 20 years ago, right? I think she was ahead of the curve on this and that. And it's different than, you know, just positive coaching. There's times where she yelled her brains out at us and was very tough. And, you know, the tough love thing was a real thing, but it was this idea of like the psychology of leadership that she, I think, tapped into, that was kind of on the more academic nerdy side for me. That was also interesting. I feel like we see that more in today's collegiate and professional space for sure, that the mental game is so important and mental health is so important. And it's not just about, physical athletic performance and winning basketball games. There's a lot more to it, which I think in many ways she was ahead of that.
Fair is a legitimately positive way of coaching.
I try to be that parent, but sometimes I'm too nice. It's a powerful tactic for sure.
So I specifically asked you about the athletic part of your life. Did you have that? And first, because that's kind of the starting of it, right? And the brewing of that foundation.
Yes.
And then you went into what became a pretty, I'll call it, killer corporate career. And I'm curious, in a positive way, killer corporate career.
I did not, though nobody was harmed.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I'm curious. When you got there, did you have a similar kind of landscape of leaders that you're able to share?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I look back and I think this is the early 2000s, right? The sky was the limit, right? I graduated from Harvard. I have a psychology degree. I didn't quite know what to do with that, but I was, 2 feet into the business world, because that's what I thought I should be doing, and put my degree to work and kind of do what I saw my peers doing, and going into that not really knowing a ton about it, but taking that leap. And I think back, I had a little bit of I'll say, like, being a little bit naive about how equal of a playing field it was, because I had experienced a lot of fairness and equitable conditions and belief in my leadership and support and resources and all these things. And it was, you know, if you practice and work hard, you will succeed. And here I go into the business world, and there's some inequities on that, and some, you know, potholes in that playing field for women, for underrepresented leaders, for LGBTQ community members, all those things. So I went into that business space thinking, you know, I can be a CEO, I could be a GM, I could do anything I want to do, and kind of nothing's going to stand in my way. Like, I can get this done. And I think I very quickly, you know, my first job was at a very large bank in the financial services industry. And I was one of, I think there were maybe 400 or 500 people on this trading floor, like kind of a boiler room. Imagine maybe two women, right? And there was a lot of misogyny, discrimination, shenanigans, for lack of a better word. And I kind of couldn't believe it. And I was like, this is not what I have been accustomed to or exposed to. So I had to adapt pretty quickly to that and say, okay, how am I going to still, you know, be a strong leader, be authentic, mitigate some of these challenges, this adversity. And I think about, you know, as I rose up in management, as I kind of changed companies and, you know, looked to parlay my experiences to get that next level, the higher up I got in leadership or in management, those problems did not go away. They were exacerbated. They were like the heat was turned up almost. It was, you know, having to face those challenges, face that, you know, those stereotypes more head on was something that I wasn't really prepared for, I'll say, but I wasn't, the executive coaching that I received and the leadership development that I was getting wasn't really equipping me to navigate and, you know, break through those barriers that I was experiencing in other underrepresented leaders were experiencing. So I think I was very optimistic when I entered the workforce. I see these examples of leaders, and I'm going out there, and as you get out into the workforce, there weren't a lot of female CEOs in the places where I was. The stats were worse then than they're getting better, but it just, those examples weren't there, and the systems weren't encouraging different ways of leading as much as I wanted them to.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And as you were talking, I was, something came to me about when I grew up playing basketball. I was literally one of a handful of girls in a gym full of guys on the weekends. I mean, we would have these like crazy 4-hour gym sessions, and I was never treated, air quotes, like a girl, or treated differently. It wasn't like I didn't really realize that was happening in this world, and it wasn't anything that was talked about in my upbringing. So as I developed myself and I graduated and I went to grad school, I started actually working. And I think sometimes when I would see it, I wasn't quite sure what was happening. I was like, wait, what is happening? Or it would take me a minute to process. And I remember in one of my first jobs, the person who was the head of the company told me that I needed to dress more to accentuate my assets. Those were the words. And I was like,
thought what? You were going to say something else, but you said, at least you said asset. It's like, human resources department, I have a... Oh. Oh my God, I have an emergency. Yeah, it's very similar thing happened to me at that same bank. And I was like, that person just say that to me out loud? Yeah. But you just can't believe it. It's just, yeah.
You're not being no idea what to do with it. And the where does it come from is a question I ask myself a lot as I do my own self-regulation over the years. But I think it was like, I just wasn't treated that way coming up. Or once I grew up, my mom and dad never were like, well, you're a girl, so you have to wear this, or you can't do this or this. To me, to your point about like, the sky's the limit, I'm going to go do whatever. But then when you actually get into the working world and you see that that's not exactly how things are, there is an element of how do we equip people, one, to not do those things, but then what happens when you do? And I know there's things like, you know, trainings and things that a lot of HR departments put out and things like that, but normalizing the conversation and having people such as yourself or like me be able to talk about it openly, those are things that can be part of how change can happen, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, the other, you know, the example of powerful role models too, like having, you know, think about that senior leadership table within a big organization. If there's diversity at that senior leadership table, there's more likely to be diversity from a pipeline perspective. And I think back, you know, I chose to work for companies that didn't have much regard for like who was on the senior leadership team or who was, you know, even the CEO. I just found a job that was a fit and sort of felt, you know, did some interviews, felt that there's a alignment. But looking back, how important representation is at that top level within an organization, because that is going to influence a lot of how their decisions are being made. And you know, I think back, you know, the opportunity to create my own company, and okay, we want to represent a wider range of how what leadership looks like. And that's what we're, you know, we're a small team, but I think, you know, when we recruit and as we're growing our team, that's something, being that role model for other people is really important.
Yeah. And building that into the fabric of how you show up, how you staff your own team is, you know, again, that's authenticity. That's not another layer of it that you have to figure out, oh, how am I going to talk about this? You
don't right, exactly.
have to, you know, but so I'm curious, we talked about that corporate sort of entry into the working world.
Yes.
Was there a sort of a pivot point or something you realized? Because I think there's two things. One, there's a realization that I want to do something different. And then the exploration, all of that, often is a time when you just have to somehow muster the bravery to just.
Yes. Yes.
And a lot of times there are various factors that can sort of catapult you into that. So I'm curious, how did you kind of go from there to here?
Yeah, no, I think about, there was a moment, I think it was when I started the corporate journey, right, it was that ladder. It was climbing and it was moving companies or within the company, trying to get that next level promotion and just trying to get to the top. And I get to, you know, the quote unquote top is the head of marketing for a large CPG company in consumer packaged goods, food and beverage based company. I won't name names, but I realized, again, this was the higher up I got, the heat was turned up, and the things that I had noticed and was trying to navigate before were heightened. And those things are, you know, bias, discrimination, misogyny, bullying. These things were happening at the board table. And there was a moment where, you know, I think about myself, like literally like jumping off the ladder. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. It was back in like 2017-ish or so. And I said, okay, I need to sort of, to use your word, pivot, but like it was kind of reinvent and say, okay, what do I know about myself? What am I good at? What do I love to do? What are my strengths? What are my passions? And I, you know, love psychology. I love leadership. I love collaboration. I was really good in branding and marketing. That had been my career for about, you know, 15 years of that. So I had that skill set, and I had had a lot of leadership development. I had had a lot of coaching, and I didn't fit in. It wasn't working for me. The tools and the approaches and the guidance that I was given was making me feel like I had to sort of morph and be a different version of myself to fit in. And I couldn't really bring my full identity as a leader to that space. And the more I tried to do that, the more I got just beaten down or yelled at, you know, enough was enough. I reached that point. I leapt off that ladder, not with no landing pad, let's just say. It wasn't like I knew what I was going to do. I did have, I think of it as this like little lily pad that I landed on for a couple of years, where I did some consulting work for a female owned firm here in Chicago, which was by choice. I wanted to work for women. And that was really, it was a safe place for me psychologically. And it let me sort of expand the aperture of the businesses that I was getting to work with. And sort of test out this more entrepreneurial space of working in an agency. And 2019, you know, flash forward a little bit later, that courage built up in me to say, okay, can I do something like this on my own? Can I solve one of those problems that I experienced as that executive who was underrepresented in leadership, who did not feel like I fit in? Can I change the paradigm a bit? Could I create a solution to help leaders like me who are experiencing what I experienced? You know, sort of power through, breakthrough, right? Those psychological barriers and the external perception barriers that I believe that I faced, and I think a lot of my peers faced. And that was, you know, strong drive within me. And that courage was building up over those couple of years. And finally, you know, got the LLC paperwork and got the website going and sort of prototyped initial, like, what are we offering to people to do this, to solve this problem? And that it's definitely been iterated over time, but it was that kind of that those two moments of like just being like, all right, this ladder, I'm done with this ladder.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm gonna sort of allow that idea to percolate and have that courage to start something in a very intentional way, but also, you know, being willing to take on some risk to do that.
Yeah. Some of the things that I appreciate about what you shared for the audience, and quite frankly, is, I don't know if it's sometimes or all the time or what, but it's basically been every time I've tried, is that there is no perfect time. And there is a degree to which you just have to hurl yourself off.
Yeah.
Unless you're someone who has just, you know, access to tons of funds in whatever way you do, there is a degree to which there is a feeling of untetheredness mm-hmm. when you make a jump like that. It takes time. And no matter how much we want it to happen really quickly, I love the example that you gave about, well, you went from one thing and had a lily pad for a while. Yeah. And that lily pad probably helped you to, as I call it, prove yourself to yourself in a new way. And then yes. to make
sort of like recover. Yeah.
Oh, that's a really yep. great point yep. too.
Yep. Just yeah. like figure out like, you know, what, like, and assess, just sort of take stock of what I had done, you know, what I wanted to do, like when, you know, and just that time to reflect is, you don't get a lot of those moments of just like, all right, I'm going to recover. I'm going to reflect what's thinking about, you know, bigger picture, what's next. And that's, you know, when you're in like the rat race or on that conveyor belt, you don't typically have those pauses. And that's sometimes just stepping back from something can be really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I like to point those things out sometimes when I'm talking with a guest like this, because as listeners are tuning in, I like to make sure that they can like extract some of these nuggets. Cause I think to some degree, a lot of us suffer similarly. So someone who's listening to this and be like, oh gosh, I really want to do this, but
yeah,
I don't know if I can. Yeah. And I've been fortunate that my husband, John, has been, you know, a part of a support as I've gone through all of this. And one thing I want to talk about is your wife works with you.
Yes.
Which I think is really interesting. So talk to us about that dynamic. You purposely chose to hire her.
Yes, I successfully recruited her. Well, we've been together since 2003. So that's a long time. So it was a long, you know, recruiting process, let's just say. She was a trusted entity, let's just say. But Lindsay had a great experience with startups in her past and, you know, scaling organizations from just an idea on a sheet of paper to, you know, large enterprise organizations. And I had this, you know, I have a lot of good ideas. I'm a visionary. Like I think about things like bringing things to life, but I don't actually know how to operate and implement and create processes and manage the financials, all those things, I guess, are typically important for running a business. And Lindsay's very good at those things. So from kind of that same spirit of what we're talking about earlier with you know, basketball team, like that player is really good at these things that I'm not good at. Together, we can absolutely achieve more. And I think she had experienced some similar frustrations and, you know, we'll say bumping our heads on those proverbial ceilings in corporate America as well. And she was ready for a change for sure. So about 3 or almost 4 years ago, we said, let's, you know, take this from a solopreneur, you know, me out in the world working with individuals to a product that we can serve up to organizations to sort of scale our efforts and scale the impact and reach, you know, thousands of leaders, not just a handful of leaders each month. And that was, you know, a strategic shift that we made, and with Lindsay's brain on it and her network and some of her former colleague of her joined us as well to really help us implement and execute and do things in a more, still very custom and high touch way, but a more standardized, repeatable, scalable way. And that's been, you know, we're always experimenting. We're always trying to, you know, tweak things to grow and make it better. But we have a really great small but mighty team in place that is helping us achieve our goals.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I purposely paused on it because for folks listening, the team that you have around you is so important. And I think there's a lot of, at times people can put assumptions. Well, you know, spouses, partners can never work together. I just think we have these preconceived notions. So I think from a representation standpoint, I think it's good to hear how you're operating your business. And
for sure.
I love the care and intentionality that you put around this small but mighty team you've formed.
Yeah. Like a roller coaster, just if I'm being really honest.
Yes.
So this is a roller coaster ride that we're on. And there's like the days where you're like, you know, this is amazing. Look at this view. We're flying high. And there's days where you're like, oh shit, it's going down. And that's up and down, but it's, we've built the roller coaster. We're on it. So we have agency, we have autonomy to, you know, we've designed this thing and we're on it. So there's, it is like, it's a very healthy challenge, I'll say, but it's, you know, it's not a walk in the park, as they say, but it is like, this is our thing. And there's a lot of, you know, pride and ownership in that. And like, in, we believe you're very passionate about it when we come at it from different angles. And that's, what makes possibilities sort of happen, which is kind of cool, but it's never a dull moment. Let's just say that.
Yeah. And thank you for the honesty about that.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, it's so great. I mean, it's just birds chirping and, you know, sun shining every day, but it's sweet. We're in it together.
Chirping and shit's blowing up.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what it is. But okay. So before I lose you, I want to hear from you.
Don't lose me. Please don't.
No, but so Breakthrough's the company and you have a book. Leadership types. You also have an assessment that folks, anybody can take the assessment for the low, low of $50 on their website.
Yes. Yeah. If you go to leadershiptypes.com, that's where the book, learn more about the book, which describes our framework. That's the disruptor to maybe some typical approaches to leadership development. And then that's the same place where you can take the, we call it a discovery tool, but you can assess self-survey, kind of see where you're charting across the 12 different leadership types.
Nice. Okay. So if people are listening to this and they're like, wow, I want more. So tell us in Breakthrough, what is it that you're doing? How could people work with you?
Yeah. So we typically will work, we will engage at like the organizational level. So we do have like offerings for individuals, but the 80% sort of bulk of our work is through organizations. So if you're, you know, within a company that has, you know, human resources or learning and development folks who are you can trust and talk to about, you know, working on your own development or groups of leaders within your company. That's typically where we will engage and help design a program for those leaders to help take them through our process, which is, you know, this discovery work to help them identify their leadership type, really putting double clicking, if you will, into their experience as leaders through an intake interview where we take in their resume, their LinkedIn, we hear your story, you know, sort of unpack purpose, mission, vision, values, all those good things, motivation. And then at the end, play back to those leaders a really robust strategy for them and bring the group back together to say, here's how you all connect and relate and are different, right? We sort of have that bird's eye view from a team dynamic. So it's that 4-week typical process is, you know, highly effective and efficient to take folks through. There is for individuals who are just, hey, I'm thinking about working on my own leadership. Great place to start is the book and that discovery tool quiz. And then, you know, if there's interest in engaging more, we can always design something for individuals, but we tend to work through those organizations, through those groups in that way.
Yeah. So if someone is actually working on a transition, like an individual working on transitioning their career, their persona, I say that because our mutual friend, Shinny, I saw her post something about that.
Yeah, of course.
And she's so remarkable. And it's so awesome to see her flourishing in her broadcast and speaking world. So it's great to see that that's something that you've been involved in.
Yeah. And kind of helping folks navigate these inflection points in their careers and helping them get clearer and almost reminding them of who they are as leaders and giving them that clarity and confidence to go out there for what is next or go out there for that. You know, in Shimmy's case, it was a pretty big transition out of coaching into the world of broadcasting, but getting people equipped and really feeling empowered to make that big change.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thank you so much for the time we've had today and being aware of your time. I know you have to get off to do something. I'm glad we touched on so many things here so that people who are listening can see representation. They're like, oh, you know, if I can see it, I can be it, I can do it, I can be a part of making change. And the other thing is sometimes I think we feel alone in the journey. And I love what you're saying is that you're able to be there for someone, for a leader, for their team and within the organization. But also, you know, if someone is looking to make a transition in their own evolution, that you're there for that too. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Shauna. Yeah, you're such a pro. You're so good.
Oh, and thank you so much for just the work you're doing. I'm truly feel honored to be a part of your journey and vice versa. And so we'll leave it on this. Is there any last takeaway that you want to make sure that you give to the audience?
No, I think I kind of thinking about our mantra, kind of our slogan is, you know, be seen, be heard, be you. And that's really giving, you know, you permission and the courage to be yourself in the places where, not just where you work, but sort of in those, all the places you occupy. And the more we can do that, the more we can facilitate, you know, emotional connections with each other and create cohesion and trust and all those good things that help teams move forward. But it starts with you kind of having that courage to be fully who you are and not be afraid to put yourself out there. So you're doing that. And that's, I think, a great mantra for those listening.
Well, thank you. And thank you for doing it as well. It's something I admire about you.
Thanks, Shauna.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody. Have an awesome day.